dawn. Here's to us, November, and the waning sun, and all the proofs I'd like to prove. We go down tonight.
Hello and welcome to episode 145 of Flags Fly Forever, a baseball prospectus fantasy podcast. I'm your host, George Bissell, and I'm joined by my usual co-host, BP's managing editor, Brett Sayer, and Mike Gianella of the BP fantasy team. We're recording this on Wednesday night. It is August 9th. Jay Bruce has been traded to the Indians. Rhys Hoskins is up for the Phillies. So there's a lot of content that is geared specifically towards you guys. What's going on? How are you feeling tonight?
Good.
Just to remind everybody again, I only live in the Philadelphia area. I'm not a Phillies fan. So, I'm interested to see what Hoskins does, but I'm not a Phillies fan.
All right, so why don't we tackle that right now, since this is going to be more of a free-flowing episode for everybody listening to this. We're going to deviate from our usual structure a little bit. It's going to be player-centric, but I do want to start with Hoskins because he was just called up. He's been a guy I've been a little bit skeptical of because of the park that he played in Double-A in Reading, but he's continued to hit in the International League in Triple-A, and now he's up, and apparently he's going to be playing in the outfield, Mike. So, you know, what are the dynamics there for Hoskins with the Phillies going forward? Because that's kind of a messy situation now, because Tommy Joseph isn't going anywhere at first base, it looks like.
Yeah, it sounds like what's happening is it sounds like they're going to try him in left. And, you know, we talked about this pre-show, and Brett, we talked about this before you came on. I don't understand why they're making, you know, Tommy Joseph or leaving him in there unless they want continuity. But Tommy Joseph just – he kind of is what he is. So we've seen over 750 plate appearances. For hitters with over 700 plate appearances since 2016, he's 24th out of 29 first basemen. And I think it's TAV. Like he just is what he is. Like he's just not somebody. Could you stick him out there and he'd be passable? Yes, but he's not going to do anything that necessarily makes you think, yay, you know, Tommy Joseph, he's going to get better. It's not like he's 22 or 23. He's older than Hoskins. So that's just kind of a weird move to me. Like, I understand why they want to see what Hoskins can do in the majors and get him some reps. Like, I just don't get why Joseph at this point isn't expendable, or at the very least, you know, you leave him on the bench and you mostly start Hoskins.
So Brett, from a more of a prospect and scouting side, he's a guy we've had to pay attention to from a dynasty standpoint for a while now, but what are your impressions of Hoskins and some of the things that he can do for fantasy owners the rest of the way this season? We've got about 7 weeks left, so what kind of impact are you expecting from Rhys Hoskins? Loaded question.
Predicting what any prospect will do in a 7 week span is a fruitless exercise. You know, obviously they'll give him some playing time. He's got the ballpark. I guess I'm cautiously optimistic, at least compared to my usual thoughts about Rhys Hoskins for the rest of this season. But I have great doubts that he will be anything other than atrocious in left field, and they just won't be able to do anything else with him. So I don't know what happens next, but yeah, he could hit, you know, 5, 6, 7 home runs if he plays most days, which is certainly reasonable. I mean, I'd pick him up in anything, you know, 14-15 team or deeper, just to, you know, kind of hope you catch lightning in a bottle if you need it.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think the power is going to be there. I want to focus more on this from sort of a process standpoint, because this has been a recurring theme on the show dating back to, I want to say, the Carlos Correa sort of timeline, and then we talked a lot about it with Gary Sanchez last year. But with all these prospects, when they come up, I think we are in an age now where we just had this sort of historic run of guys who are elite prospects, like Correa, Lindor is another good example of this. Guys who came up and were immediately like fantasy studs. And now I think people are trending into an area where they're overreacting to what they think some of these prospects can do. And you know, a good example is like Joey Gallo. It's taken him forever to be anything here at the major league level. So are you guys noticing this a little bit, that maybe people are paying closer attention to prospects and maybe inflating their expectations a little too much on that front?
Yeah. I mean, I think yes, but you know, I don't think it's entirely unfair. I think we've seen prospects come up and have sort of the advantage right away at their adjustments. But, you know, it seems like the last two or three years we've seen, even players who haven't held it, we've seen players come up and be successful right out of the bat, especially in the power department. It's just been, you know, there eventually becomes a book and everyone reads it, and then, you know, you have to figure out how to adjust back when major league pitchers have a better idea of where to go to get you out.
Yep. Mike, did you have any thoughts on sort of the state of prospects and their fantasy impact here? Because I think it's a fun topic, but it's definitely complicated to discuss on this type of a show. But did you have any thoughts there?
I also think, to just to add to what Brett's saying, that the difficulty here is trying to read too much into half of a season as a trend. Mm. You know, you look at Aaron Judge, you look at Bellinger, and you think, hey, you know, there's suddenly all this power, and guys are going to come up and hit for power. And, you know, we've kind of seen it with Judge more so than Bellinger, but, you know, you've seen with a few of these rookies, you know, to Brett's point, the adjustment gets made. You know, I've watched the way Judge has been pitched more so than Bellinger in the second half, and you're like, well, pitchers are doing exactly what Brett's saying. They're coming around. It's not like, you know, Aaron Judge has never hit a home run again. He's hit a few, but he's wasn't going to be, you know, a 50, 60 home run guy. That just wasn't what he was. And that's the other side of this with Hoskins, is that he could come up and hit a bunch of home runs right out of the gate. It's more likely, if I had to guess, you know, like Brett's estimate's about right. You know, he'll hit a few, but he'll probably, you know, he'll probably struggle a little bit, you know, compared to AAA, just because it's a different venue. Now, on the other hand, what I do find kind of interesting is, you know, if you believe that the ball is altered or different, which it's kind of hard not to believe that to some degree. That's benefiting these hitters who hit for power. And, you know, one more thing I'll say about Hoskins is that venue, you know, Brett and I have been there, and, you know, George, I know you haven't. That's a really tough park for hitters. It's one of the toughest, if not the toughest, venue in AAA for a hitter. It plays a lot like a major league park. So, you know, it's not like Hoskins is getting these. Like, I know Scott Kingery, another Phillies prospect, at AA he was getting, you know, was a hitter's park. But not only that, he was barely scraping the ball over the fence, according to some eyewitness accounts. Hoskins was not hitting cheapies, at least not at home. So it's going to be interesting to see how well his power translates to Philadelphia.
Yeah, that's a great point about the park factors, because that's probably the main reason why I've softened my stance on Hoskins a little bit. I was very anti-Hoskins, I would say, about a year ago at this time, because, like you mentioned, the park factors in AA, Redding, one of the most favorable hitters' parks in the entire minor leagues. And then you have, on top of that, the depth at first base, where you just have to hit for so much power to be a viable commodity in a mixed league. So those are some of the reasons I was down on Hoskins. But if he's going to get outfield eligibility, and with his type of power, this is somebody I think in a deep league you want to take a shot on. So you're listening to Flags Fly Forever. We are a Baseball Prospectus Fantasy Podcast. Just a little bit of housekeeping here, and then we're going to dive into our main topic again. You can read all of us at baseballprospectus.com. Subscribe today with a 1-year premium membership. That's the best way to read all of our content. You can follow us on Twitter. Brett is at Brett Sayer BP. Mike is at Mike Gianella. And I am at George Bissell. That's with 2 S's and 2 L's. Subscribe, rate, or review us on iTunes, whatever app you listen to, you use to listen to this podcast. Every rating or review helps us out tremendously. So if you could go drop us a quick rating and review if you like the show, we would really appreciate that. So here's what we're going to do tonight. I sent out a text this morning. I said, hey guys, what do you want to talk about? And we've settled on, we're each going to pick a couple of players or storylines or trends that impact the fantasy landscape that we're paying attention to over these last couple of weeks. So I figured I would open up the floor here. I know Mike has prepared a couple of topics, so thank you, Mike. let me know, what's your first topic, something that's weighing on your mind right now?
Well, something I've been thinking about recently. So I wrote something about a month ago, and it was along the lines of, you know, starting pitchers don't pitch nearly as much as they used to. You know, or in terms of innings pitch, you know, they're going aren't going as far into games. So what I'm wondering down the stretch as we head into September, whether you're in a wins league or a quality starts league, there aren't going to be as many of those. Now, in a wins league, obviously, relievers are even more valuable because you're going to pick those wins up. Like tonight, for example, it was Masahiro Tanaka didn't even make it five innings, and he had to come out. And Chad Green, who's been really, really good, and you know, unless you're an AL only, he's kind of flown under the radar. Of course, he struggled tonight. But you know, my point is that how do you adjust for this in just about any format except a standard mix? In a standard mix, you can just stream starting pitchers in. You go for the better pitchers. It doesn't really matter. I'm just really curious if this is something, George and Brett, if you've thought about this and it's on your mind. If you haven't considered it, you know, are you doing anything differently? Are you making an adjustment? Like if you have a team that's, you know, you need wins points, for example, are you maybe looking at some other categories?
I think Brett, you probably have more input on this because you're dealing with this in a lot of the expert leagues right now, right? Just the pitching struggles you've had putting together a rotation a little bit.
Yeah, my pitching staff is fucked in both labor and tout this year for a while. Actually it was okay in tout for a little bit, but I've been resigned to being last in both ratios in labor for a little while. So I've been just streaming starters constantly, and I've gained probably 15 to 20 points in the standings over the last 4 to 6 weeks. So I'm no longer in danger of finishing in last place, which is good, but, I can't get enough points to matter. My tau team was kind of was doing fine, and then it was sort of ravaged by injuries both on offense and pitching all at the same time. So I'm hanging on at this point to what's probably going to be a middle of the pack finish, somewhere around 6th through 8th. But you know, it's definitely a different landscape out there, because there's two competing factors, right? And some of this may be anecdotal because I haven't looked at it specifically, but you have the starters, which are you know, you have your handful of elite starters, and then everyone else is just a jumbled mess after that. You've got guys that are overperforming, guys that are underperforming, but there is a big drop off after your first, you know, 4 or 5 names. Then on the reliever side, you would generally think, okay, so maybe instead of some of the back end guys, I'll go after some relievers. But relievers haven't seen the tick up that you would expect with strikeouts going up and starter workloads continuing to go down. Maybe it's just that some of the more interesting relievers have either been bad or gotten hurt. And when I say relievers, I mean non-closers. The closers are always interesting, but they're usually taken and they're usually expensive if you want one. But you know, there isn't a great crop of middle relievers this year to be able to really plug in. And you know, if you're not getting a ton of strikeouts and you're not getting really strong ratios, then yeah, I think you're better off just, you know, throwing a bunch at the wall and seeing what sticks in terms of starting rotation, as opposed to rolling out 3 or 4 relievers on a regular basis.
Yeah, the reliever pool is definitely weird. You know, I'm thinking like there's a few guys who've emerged that have been good. Like Yusmeiro Petit is a guy who I've kind of latched onto in a couple leagues. Like Brandon Morrow has been really good. But then for every guy like that works out, you get like a Kirby Yates who gives up 6 runs in 1/3 of an inning and can really get you in trouble. So Yeah, I'm with you. I think this is a good year to stream starters because unless you have like a Chris Sale type, you need the volume of those innings, so you're just going out and picking up whoever. So, I'm with you there on that, Mike. Did you have any other stuff for this one? I think it's a really good topic, by the way. Really good choice.
I think the only thing I'd add is in a really deep league, like an AL or NL only, that's where it's a little bit different, just because the damage you can do to your ratios with a bottom of the barrel starter is considerable. You know, like if you look, you know, at the pool, like in, and I know Brett, you're in that one NL only that you're in that I think uses strikeouts instead of whip.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even a league like that, like the damage, like all the way like down at the bottom when you're talking about someone like Edwin Jackson. And that's like one of your better options. I picked him up in tout this week, by the way, which Brett loved. That's just considerable. Yeah, I like the matchup with Ajax this week in an NL only. I wouldn't touch him anywhere else.
Yeah, I mean, it's not pretty out there. I mean, I picked up Ubaldo Jimenez in probably three different leagues this week, just because he's pitching at Oakland, I think, on Friday.
He hasn't been all that terrible, though, recently.
He's been good lately, but he's one of those guys that, you know, as soon as you pick him up, he's going to go out and give up 9 runs. So I fully expect this to happen, but I just couldn't not do it with that matchup.
Yeah, I mean, even guys I've like a good example of like good process, bad result is sort of Trevor Cahill, right, Mike? Like a guy I liked for a lot of reasons that you should like a pitcher, and he's just kind of sucked in 3 starts since coming over to Kansas City. So what are you going to do? That's the case for streaming. It's like even if you have a pitcher you like, who you invest in with a roster spot, they can still suck just as much as anyone you pick up off the waivers. Pretty much.
Yeah, the thing about Cahill that I think has kind of been lost a little bit. Well, first of all, he wasn't going to be as good as he was in that handful of starts with San Diego. Right. But he was going back to starting after spending a year as a reliever. The second half for him was going to be worse. I do believe that a lot of the adjustments he made are legitimate, but he's just kind of fatigued and burned out right now. I think there's still a better pitcher there than what we've seen if he can hang on to those improvements. I just think that there was some excitement, you know, mainly by you, George, that might have been a little bit over the top, but I do believe that he's a legitimate, you know, guy, I'd say, in a deeper mix for next year.
Yeah, another good example of that is Alex Wood, right? A guy who may be hitting the wall here. His velocity's declined a little bit. They're worried about his mechanics a little bit. He starts later tonight, but we'll see how that goes. Dodgers might have to shut him down, which is not great, but we'll see. Brett, what's your first topic, something that's on your mind lately?
I want to talk about one particular player. If I told you that that player X was hitting 338, 422, 701 since the All-Star break with 5 homers and 4 steals, would you think that was good? This is in 22 games. Would you like that?
I'd be on board with that. Let's do it. Sign me up.
Okay. Now, before the All-Star break, this player was hitting 256, 338, 419. Was nothing special. Was disappointing compared to draft position. Any guesses as to who I'm talking about?
Is it Wilson Contreras who got hurt?
It is not Wilson Contreras.
Okay. We've texted about him, by the way. That's a fun conversation.
I'd say James McCann, but the power hasn't been there for McCann. He's mostly...
No, I'll give you one additional hint. During this 22-game span, this player has also picked up shortstop eligibility.
Oh, I know who you're talking about. Okay. Mike, do you know?
No.
It's Alex Bregman, isn't it?
It is definitely Alex Bregman.
Ah. Larry Schechter's nephew.
Yeah, it is Larry Schechter's nephew. So Bregman was not bad. He was just disappointing compared to what I think people were expecting out of him. Right around the All-Star break. You know, his overall numbers look really good now, but his overall numbers look solid now, but that is because he's been on an absolute tear the last month. And this is what he was expected to do. Not quite to this extent, but he's walking more than he's striking out. He is a player that is built around the hit tool. He's got power and speed to boot. Not a ton. He's not going to be. I don't think he's really going to be a 20-plus home run hitter consistently. He may be able to get to 20 some years. I don't think he's going to be a big stolen base guy either. Even though I think he can get to 15 to 20 now, but that overall profile, if he's hitting for average, especially in playing in that Astros lineup with the counting stats that he should be able to get in a more normal season, and should be able to get down the stretch, honestly, once now that Springer's back and Correa hopefully is not that far away from coming back either. He is going to be a popular trade target down the stretch in redrafts. I mean, in dynasty leagues, he was likely not going to be available anyway. But it's not impossible that you could still snag him before his owner quite realizes how hot he's been. But he's 20. Is he still 23? He's still 23. He won't turn 24 until right around opening day next year. Bregman's going to be really good, and he's really good right now. So the
big variable there, I guess, long term, right, is where he bats in the order, because he started out the year, I want to say, batting second in that lineup, and then they moved him down. Do you think he gets back to the top of the order anytime soon, or is this just something we're not going to be able to predict? Just like him getting shortstop eligibility, I don't think we foresaw that coming into the year either.
No, I don't think it's really possible to predict, but there's certainly a very good argument to putting him back up in the two spot, even with Springer back. It's a deep lineup. They can kind of play with where they put Altuve and Springer, but even if Bregman is hitting sixth or seventh, he's still a force to be reckoned with.
By the way, Mike, I know we've talked about this together, but we haven't done it on the show. But Brett, good call on Yulieski Gurriel. He looks pretty good at baseball. So nice work there. I don't think we've talked about that.
He is pretty good. He's not like great, but he's good.
He never strikes out. It's the craziest thing.
I think he's like, I was looking at this. He's fourth or fifth in the AL in third base, because he had that eligibility, coming in overall, like in terms of where he's ranked. Yeah, he's kind of putting in an under the radar solid. He's not a superstar, but I don't think anyone claimed he would be. He's kind of putting in a solid, like under the radar, like really good season.
Yeah, he's the guy, right, when you go like stars and scrubs in an auction, he's the scrub that can help you win, essentially. Like he's been
great. Yeah, in a mixed league. Yeah, I would say if you did you get him in tout, Brett? I don't remember.
In tout, yes.
Oh, you did. Okay, and what'd you pay for him?
I got him as my first pick in the reserve round.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I mean that's, exactly. What's the thing? Like in that league, I thought he would have went for maybe like, it was OBP, which he's a little less value. So I thought he would have went for like one or two, and you got him in the reserve round. Yeah, that's a really solid play there.
Yep.
Yeah, and I started him most weeks. I just traded him, but he had been starting, pretty much all the time for me.
Yeah, he's been my best corner in labor AL, and a league where I've also had Chase Headley, who you can laugh, but an AL has a little bit of value, and Hanley, who really has been kind of disappointing.
Cool.
He's been pretty brutal. But yeah, I mean, I don't remember exactly what I said about Gurriel coming into the season, but this is pretty much exactly in line with what I was expecting. This sort of, 280 to 300 average, 20 homers, just solid all around stats.
I thought the average would be a little higher, but otherwise, yeah, he's kind of right around where I expected him to be.
Yeah.
Is it 294?
Yeah, I thought he'd be like closer to like 310. That's where I saw him at.
Yeah.
There's still time.
Yeah.
So for everybody listening, like, we don't have all the answers. We get a lot of things wrong, but I think it is helpful to point out some of the players that we were right about, so you can apply that from a process standpoint. The guy I want to talk about here, well, there's two guys. I pulled it up today just because I was doing a little research for this show, and there are two pitchers right now with two starters with at least 100 innings pitched who have struck out over 10 per 9, they're walking under 2.5 per 9, and have a 50% ground ball rate. Do either of you guys think you can name those two starters?
I can definitely name one, but I don't want to ruin it for you. Now I'm trying to think of the other one.
I don't think I could. I'm very bad at this game tonight.
Well, give me the one you know.
The one I know?
Yes, do it.
Jimmy Nelson.
That's right. Jimmy Nelson is one. The other, Mike, is right up your alley. I mean, hopefully that narrows it down for you.
Is it Aaron Nola?
Close. No, it's Luis Severino.
Oh, I thought you were saying alley because of Philadelphia.
Okay. No, but we've talked a lot about Severino. And I just think it's interesting that those two guys, I think, more than almost any other pitchers, have really improved their stock this season. I've been blown away by what Jimmy Nelson's done, especially with the gains in control. He walked nearly 4.5 per nine a season ago, and I think he gave up more hits than any other starter in baseball, and he was just not good. His walk rate is 2.16 right now. The strikeout rate's over 10, so he's striking out 27% of batters this season he's faced. Which is up from 17% a year ago. ERA 3.24 in 23 starts. I don't know what more you want to see from Jimmy Nelson. He's got the fastball and the curveball combo really going right now. And what he did on Sunday against Tampa Bay, I think he punched out, I want to say, 9 batters in 8 innings, gave up just 1 run. The guy's good. I don't know what I'm going to do with him for next season, where I would consider ranking him, but he's durable and he's doing everything you want from a starting pitcher. So I'd be interested in what you guys think about not only Nelson but Severino as well. Like, where are we going to rank these guys when we start having these discussions in a few weeks, assuming they continue to pitch well the rest of the year, obviously?
Well, you know, I'll start with Severino because, you know, I as you know, George, I really like him. And I've kind of made the point about Severino that there's a couple things. First of all, pitchers like this sometimes do take a couple years to coalesce, and the Yankees used him as a reliever. And, you know, some of that was to save wear and tear. And there was definitely an adjustment for him going to the rotation where you'd watch him and you could see, you know, particularly the second time through the lineup, he didn't have the confidence in his stuff. He was kind of being tentative. He wasn't really pitching the way that you would expect someone with his stuff or ability to pitch. You know, you watch Severino this year and, you know, none of that's there. Like, I've just seen a pitcher who looks, when the stuff is on, like he has like some of the best stuff in the league. So, you know, the reason I keep bringing him up, just to let our listeners know, yeah, I've kind of made the point that, you know, James Paxton's the guy. He was everybody's sleeper coming into the season. And, you know, it's as I always say, you know, if everybody's sleeper, he's nobody's sleeper. And Paxton was taken, I think, about 151 in NFBC. He's certainly been a bargain compared to that, obviously, but, you know, he hasn't been so much of a bargain at that slot where you're like, oh my goodness, like I can't believe that, you know he went that far down. Severino, I'm looking for it now, but I know he went much like lower than that. I want to say,
I mean, he wasn't even a lock for the rotation, I want to say, coming out of
also true. You know, that's an interesting kind of Yankee. Yeah, he went like 350. And you're right. Some of that was that he wasn't a lock for the rotation. Yeah, some of the names around him, like right before him, were Tyler Anderson.
Oh, God.
Matt Andreese. And then the other way, we had Luke Weaver, well, Alex Wood, which is funny, and Jaime Garcia.
Not great. Yeah.
To answer your question, you know, I would look at Severino as conservatively, you know, and I don't do these ranks now, but I'd probably look at him as a top 20 guy. It's really difficult not to look at what he's done and his performance and not see him, and that's probably conservative. I don't really see how you could have him outside of the top 20.
Yeah, I'm with you on Severino. He just looks like a guy who's confident in the way he's attacking hitters, and that's a big change from what we've seen before. I remember seeing him pitch in Triple A and just being like, I don't know what I'm watching right here. So, yeah. Brett, did you have any Jimmy Nelson or Luis Severino thoughts? I know you've been very high on Severino over the course of the year.
Yeah, I think, Severino is, I think we kind of learned what not to do with these short pitchers that are coming off of big, reasonably big workloads. I mean, we saw this with Carlos Martinez, what, 2 years ago? Mm-hmm. When Martinez was mostly a reliever the year prior and went to the rotation and threw, 190 innings or so. And Martinez was fine. He's been very good. And Severino's been better than Martinez has really ever been, as much as I and many of us have liked Martinez. I don't think falling into those trappings is healthy for anyone. I think Severino is a, especially with that offense behind him, I think there's no great reason why he shouldn't be considered a really strong SP2 next year. Nelson, I'm a little more skeptical of at that performance level, but I think he's sort of a tick below Severino. I think he's more of an SP3 for next year, but obviously he's done a ton to raise his stock this year.
Yeah, I think my big concern long term with Nelson is if the control backslides a little bit, he's definitely not as attractive, and the margin for error with him is definitely lower. Being in that ballpark in Milwaukee, he's still a guy who does give up his share of home runs. So, if he's putting guys on base, and that could be a problem for him. But even like his BABIP this year is .327. Like he's doing this with a pretty high BABIP compared to his career rates. So, I like what I've seen from Nelson. There's not much more I need to see out of him to be confident in him going forward. Let's go back to you, Mike. What's your next topic here you got?
So I wanted to talk a little bit, this is another broader topic. I'm bringing these tonight. The first thing I mentioned was, wins and kind of how to adjust to that or play for that. The second one I want to mention is, we know that home runs have gone up, and they've gone up to the extreme. Like we know that there's so many players now who have power and have that capability. So this isn't so much a question of who's like the next Aaron Judge or who's the next Bellinger. I'm wondering more from a strategy standpoint, are you willing in an auction or a draft for that matter, to just think, well, there are so many surprises, there are so many players like that who are going to hit home runs that we're not aware that they are? Or you're looking at it the other way, you're looking at it that there's so much power that you definitely want to target one or two or three big power guys to be in your draft or auction?
That's a really great question. I think for me, I'm looking more at skills in terms of contact with power. Like a good example of this is Charlie Blackman, right? He's a guy who plays in a great park and he makes a lot of contact, and his power you can see the steady progression in his profile. So I think those are kind of the guys. Like Justin Turner is another great example of this. I like his contact profile and you can see the progression there. So I don't think you can look at it from the standpoint of, all right, I can just totally ignore first base because I can get a power hitter later. Like, if I'm going into a draft next year, like I'll be able to find a guy who hits for power later, because that's not always the case. You're not going to know who that guy is coming into the year. Like who saw Justin Smoke coming or Yonder Alonso, someone like that. And a lot of those guys have cooled off too. This is a topic that I think maybe merits discussion too, is that a lot of those guys that we saw early on in the year, like Eric Thames is a great example of this, you know, those guys who surged early on, a lot of them have cooled off and not given you as much as you would have expected, you know, at the end of April. So that's a really good question. I just think when you always talk about this, Mike, you don't want to overreact too much and change your entire process. So I'm definitely thinking about it more as I construct my team that, all right, everyone's going to be able to find power. So I'm putting less weight on players who have, you know, that sort of power only profile. But I'm not changing my entire strategy just because of that, or going in the opposite direction and saying, I'm going to load up on steals, because you could just as easily draft like a Jonathan VR and, you know, not get anything out of it. So yeah. I wouldn't go crazy changing my overall approach here is what I'm trying to say, but it's a great question.
That's usually a Jeff Quinton point that he makes as far as process versus, like you said, like looking at less results and being so into results. And what makes it difficult with this topic is you have to assume that the landscape's changed. You know, if the ball is altered or different, maybe they go back, you know, maybe they throw it, you know, back to the way it was. You know, the one thing I find interesting about this, so I was looking at this, I was putting together a freestyle that I was going to come out with tomorrow, but the research took long enough that it's going to be Friday now. And it's really interesting that coming into action on Wednesday, for all the home runs that have been hit, you know, it's not like there's a bunch of guys. It's not like the Sturrider. Like, it's not like there's a bunch of guys who are going to hit like 60 or over 50. Like, Judge and Stant were the only guys on pace to go over 50. Mm-hmm. And, you know, yeah, there's a few guys on pace to go over 40. Like, it looks like there's five in the NL. Well, with Bruce in the AL now, there's four in the NL. But, you know, heading into before that trade, there were five. And then in the AL, there were six. So, you know, obviously I could change in one direction or the other. Like, Miguel Sano could get hot and hit 40. Logan Morrison, who's on pace for 40, he's kind of fade a little bit. I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't get there.
No, he's not. He won't get
there. Right. But it's that whole thing. So as much power as there's been, this is kind of where I look at it. Like, you know, in the steroid era, you kind of wanted to – this is my opinion on this. So you wanted to make sure you got that power from, like, a top guy, because if you had a Sosa or McGuire hitting, like, 60 home runs or 65 home runs – that was this big boost. It's really, this really looks more like everybody's benefiting. So it's not like Giancarlo Stanton, who was going to hit home runs anyway, is suddenly a 75 home run monster. It's more like, well, he's hitting 55, and, you know, some of that's health for him, of course, but even, you know, in his healthy best years, he wasn't hitting 55 home runs. This is where I'm looking a little bit differently than a few years ago. I see him as somebody. I see it as a strategy where you do want to just kind of build your team across the board for value, as opposed to trying to, you know, get a big bomber.
Yeah, I mean, this is a good point that coincides with some of the research on this, that the power surge, you know, the home run surge, it's benefited more the guys at the bottom of the pool, right? Because if you're Giancarlo Stanton, you're hitting the baseball 450 feet, that ball was clearing the fence anyway, you know what I mean? But it's guys who maybe had warning track power, they weren't hitting as many fly balls over the fence, that they're gaining that little bit of extra distance, and it's really helping them out this year, so... Something to think about. Brett, are you back here? Did you have any thoughts on how to approach the home run surge in terms of roster construction? I don't know if Brett's back.
Hang on, we might have lost Brett. You know,
Brett said, "Oh no, we lost Brett."
I you know, since we're waiting for Brett, I'll kind of add as well that just to go back to the steroid era, I pointed this out before, but something kind of, you know, and you reminded Miss George with you were talking about the warning track fly balls. Something important to remember about that steroid era, there were a couple things. Obviously, players were juicing and it was pre-testing, but there were two rounds of expansion. You know, it was one in 1993 with the Marlins and the Rockies, and then a second one in 1998 with the Diamondbacks and the there was a second round of expansion in 1998 with the Diamondbacks. I don't know, I'm blanking on the other team there. I'm feeling a little fatuous about this.
The Marlins?
The Marlins, yeah.
Yeah.
No, the Marlins were in 93.
Oh, Arizona.
Well, Arizona, yeah, but there were two teams in each round, George.
Well, who's the other one? Oh my
well, that's
God.
That's what I'm saying. It was the Rays. George.
Yes, there it is.
I don't know why I was. Oh, you know, I was blanking because they went from being the Devil Rays to the Rays. That's why.
Yeah, it messes you up.
I still feel stupid about it. So you can, if this makes it a show, you can laugh at me all you want.
I mean, doing some serious editing.
We're going past my bedtime here. So, all the technical difficulties. But anyway, so there were two rounds of expansion, and expansion tends to affect the pitchers much more than the hitters in terms of the quality. And then the other thing, too, and this is something people don't remember that almost never gets talked about. So for all of the complaints about the strike zone now, the strike zone back then was like practically nothing. It was they weren't calling anything above the belt, so it was this tiny zone. They were calling a wide zone, which benefited someone like Tom Glavine, who was throwing off the plate. But essentially anything that was, like, I'd say at the, like, navel or a little bit above that was a ball. So hitters were feasting. So as much – and that's part of why you're seeing now what you're seeing where, yeah, there's a lot of home runs, but batting average is still down, strikeouts are up, and for pitchers, and, you know, so it's a shift too where it's affecting batting averages. So, yeah, home runs are up, but it's not like it was 20 years ago where offense was just up completely – and there seemed to be no solution in sight for pitchers. So, you know, if you're expecting that kind of landscape where you think offense is going to be up across the board, that's not going to happen.
All right. I like these process-oriented questions. These are probably my favorite topics to expand upon here. So what else you got? I want to hear.
Oh, it's funny because I guess the other question I wanted to ask if we're doing process. So beginning of the year, remember how – it seemed like the phenomenon was the first baseman.
Yeah, like, you know, talked about. Yeah, yep.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny you mention that because it was actually on my list. I'm not just cribbing your topic.
Perfect.
So you had Eric Thames, you had Ryan Zimmerman, you had Yonder Alonso, you had – well, he kind of came up a little bit later. You had Logan Morrison. So what happened to all those guys? Like, I mean, a lot of those guys are
– Mark,
you know,
Reynolds.
Eric Thames – yeah, Mark Reynolds. You know, Eric Thames is on pace. I did my valuation today for that article I was mentioning. Eric Thames is on pace to earn $17 in NL only, which is fine. But like in a standard mix at this point, he's almost not viable. Like, I know that sounds really strange given the April that he had. But if you held on to him in a league because of his hot April, and who wouldn't have held on to him? Because people at the time were like, can he hit 50 home runs? You know, I know he's not going to break, you know, the home run record, but can he hit 50? Can he hit 60? He's going to hit at least 40. And right now he's just somebody who, you know, he kind of, in a mixed league, at least, he kind of looks like a guy. Like, he doesn't look like anybody who's anything special. Like, am I wrong? Like, am I off base about that? Like, he's just someone. Yeah. He's got 25 home runs, and, you know, he's another one. He's on pace to hit, you know, I'm kind of looking at him. He's on pace to hit 36 home runs.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, you're like, eh, like, okay.
Here's my take, and the example I always like to use for this is Justin Upton, right? He's a guy who has historically had, he's been very consistent this year, so he's not a great example for this season, but historically speaking, he's a guy who's had these tremendously painful cold spells and then blazing hot streaks that have made his overall numbers at the end of the year, when you look back at them, you're like, all right, he's solid. Like, this is a guy I want. And it gets back to the point, like, obviously this is a marathon, not a sprint, but when you look at a projection, when we make a projection at the start of the year for a player, right, especially for a hitter, there are a lot of ways that they can get to that projection, right? The road there is there's a lot of variability there. There's going to be stretches where a guy's going well and stretches where they're going cold. So we deal with it every year. Like, this guy started strong and faded in the second half, or, you know, got off to a slow start, really picked it up. So how we perceive players depends a lot on how they reach that end projection or that final stat line. So, like those guys you were all referencing at first base, you know, a lot of them got off to a really hot start, but now have faded. So it's like, I try not to overreact to it too much. It's more of a, you know, I want to look at the profile and I want to follow sort of the drum beat, that the narrative that goes with it. Like, was this guy hurt? Was there an injury we didn't know about? Did he change something in his profile? Did pitchers change the way they attacked him? So those are all the things that you have to take into account. Instead of just throwing them all in one barrel, like, that would be very easy to do. I think in this offseason, we're going to have to spend a lot of time analyzing them individually and finding out what changed, if anything, over the course of these last few months. So that's another really good question.
Yeah, I think the takeaway for me here, and I say this all the time, and somebody, it wasn't Rob Silver, but somebody brought this up on Twitter. You know, he made the point that, you know, if Ryan Zimmerman had his April in July, it might have generated some comment. Like, people might have been like, oh, like, he's having a really good month. But it wouldn't have generated the degree of discussion that we had about Ryan Zimmerman. And look, Ryan Zimmerman, this is the other thing about him. He's having a good year. You know, there's no doubt about it. He's stayed healthy, which is the big thing for him. He's played 101 games. He's on pace to play the most games that he'll play since 2013. And, you know, if you take out his, you know, defensive metrics, which you can kind of be cynical about, you know, he's on pace to have his best year offensively since all the way back in 2010, or best since then. So, yeah, he's been a really good hitter. You know, the other difference between Zimmerman and Thames, too, is the batting average. The power's dropped for Zim, but he's hitting over 300. Like, that part of his value proposition is kept up. Whereas for Thames, unless you're in an OBP league, you know, he's hurting you in batting average, and that's the other problem with him.
So your point about Zimmerman, I think, is fascinating, because this reminds me of a quote from Noel Gallagher. You know him, right? From Oasis, the musician.
Yeah, I know that.
He had a quote, I think it was in a Chuck Klosterman piece that ran in one of his books recently that I read. I think his quote was along the lines of, well, if we had made all these other records first and then Wonderwall last, people would have said, wow, you know, the narrative of their career is entirely different. But the fact that they made that first, like Zimmerman had the hot month to start, the fact that they started off at that point of, you know, brilliance and greatness and then faded, it changes the entire narrative of their careers.
It's George Costanza's going out on a high note thing, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So
now, there is something to that, although in baseball it's almost the opposite, because we look at each season as so like 5 years from now, if we look back at Ryan Zimmerman, you know, and he's not a Hall of Famer, he's not an elite player, he's a good player, but so we're not going to spend a lot of time doing that. But, you know, 5 years from now in 2022, if we look back at Ryan Zimmerman at the end of his career and we look at this year, we're like, oh, he had a nice bounce back year. We probably won't think so much about his April and what he did. We'll probably just look at his overall line and be like, yeah, he was okay. Like, he came back a little bit, and, you know, he must have been healthy. Yeah. Like, we won't dwell on – like, that's serious with Oasis. Like, you're right. Like, if – in that case, because there's time between albums, you know, we kind of look at – like, you know, I guess another good example is if you look at Alien Ant Farm. If they had come out, if they had been around for years and years and years, and they had come out with Smooth Criminal, like on their, you know, fifth go round, I think people are like, oh man, like this funky little independent band came out with this cool song or this cool cover, but as a result of, you know, them coming out with that so early, now it's almost like a, you know, this Onion article that's like this funny, I think came out like 3 years ago, which is like, you know, we're still thinking that we might have another big hit, and we believe kind of thing. And so,
right.
it's kind of absurd, but that is the whole idea, which is we are, you know, this would be something great to have Jeff on next year, or, you know, at some point and talk about. We have these expectations, and they really do get built on the idea. Like, there's a lot of people now with Aaron Judge who look at him like, oh yeah, you know, he's not going to be good anymore. It's like, well, the guy has 35 home runs, and nobody expected Aaron Judge to hit 35 home runs this year. I would think the optimists for him were probably expecting 25 to 30 with a bad batting average.
Yeah, fair. Like,
he's already better than what anybody could have expected for him. So
right, but
you're absolutely right, George. It's a great point about, you know, expectations.
Yeah, for Judge, like, flip the halves, right? Let's say Judge continues to kind of just be, you know, good but not a superstar. If he had just been average in the first half and then hit like 30 bombs in the second half, people would be losing their minds next year. So I just think it's important to keep it all in context that it's a long season, and you just have to understand that there's going to be volatility in how these guys produce over the course of a year. So I always think of Justin Upton whenever I deal with that type of an issue. So all right, let's see. I had some thoughts on, you know, guys like Chris Taylor, Ronald Acuna, but they're not as important. I'll tease those. We're going to talk about those next time we do a pod. Yeah. But
won't be here. Nah, I think we can wrap up. This was a nice little round table, and we, yeah. I think we talked about like 50 minutes, and we were just going to do half an hour tonight. Yeah, just so everyone know, I'm going to be on vacation next week, so it's just going to be Brett and George, unless you guys manage to bring a guest in. And I think after next week, we're talking about going to every other week for a little while, too.
Yeah, actually, fun story. I am going to be off as well next week, probably on this show. So, here's what we're going to do. We're going to be taking next week off entirely, guys. So if you have any questions for us, just hit us up on Twitter. That's probably the best way if you need to get in touch with us. But we're going to be off next week for 1 week. Then we'll come back. It'll probably be all of us again. And then we're going to go every other week. Just because we're at the point in the season where there's just not a lot of analysis left to do. You're kind of just playing out the last couple of weeks here. And then once the off season starts, we'll still be going every other week. And then as we hit sort of the January-February range, when we start to get into our season previews and everything like that, the fun stuff, the good stuff, then we'll be back to every week and then rolling into the season. So, we lost Brett a little bit a while ago. We had some technical difficulties there. So Brett's gone, but Mike and I are going to wrap up the show. We'll take a quick break and come right back. We're back. Thank you for listening to episode 145 of Flags Fly Forever. This has been a Baseball Prospectus Fantasy Podcast. Subscribe today with a 1-year premium membership to read all of us on baseballprospectus.com. If you sign up for the super premium membership, I highly recommend it. You get to bother Craig Goldstein at all hours of the day with your fantasy questions, and the rest of our talented fantasy team, they will answer your questions professionally and as quickly as possible. So make sure you sign up for the super premium membership today. You can follow us on Twitter. Mike is at Mike Gianella. Brett is at Brett Sayer BP. And I'm at George Bissell. Finally, don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes or whatever app you use to listen to this show. We really appreciate all the great reviews you guys have left us. So if you like the show, please head on over and leave us a review there. So, like we talked about, Mike and I are off next week, so we're going to be off as a podcast for the first time since, I don't know, it's been a while. Like, we have not had any breaks.
It was probably the end of 2016. I maybe we had 1 week off, but usually, I think since January, it's been a grind. So yeah, we're kind of, we love doing the show, but we love this time where we kind of chill out a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit. Let's just enjoy some of the games here. Enjoy the process. All right. So for Mike and Brett, this is George saying thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back in 2 weeks. So long.
Bye-bye.